IPP services in association with Google1.co.uk present the 20 megabyte Dr. Moore podcast.
Welcome to the 20 megabyte Doctor Who podcast number 181. I'm Adam, and I forgot to look up a special quote from the show. Here's Mary Lang.
Like you, this planet depresses me.
Rhys Parton.
Thank you.
When you become as we are, you will serve the cyber race well.
Robert Haynes.
I'm trying to stop the show! Said you...
Bye.
Oh, we're off to a good start.
Robert Haynes. Sorry, but yeah. Forget Robert Haynes.
Get to finish
I thought
story.
You said you were for Fulham.
Who else we got? Thanks to Isabella, I've completely lost where I was now. Just introduce yourself.
We're at Robert.
I've done Robert.
I didn't hear a quote.
Then we're
I've been
Kirby.
Done.
I said I thought you were from Fulham.
He did do a quote.
Yeah, Kirby.
What, me?
Yes.
Yes, you
excellent.
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 Well, Matthew, have I done Matthew yet?
No, you have not.
Right. Here we go. Matthew Kressel.
You know, Griffiths, when I look at you, I often wonder why your ancestors bothered to climb out of the primordial slime.
Excellent.
I thought someone would go for that. Right.
Yeah, is that everybody now? I've probably got Isabella's probably grizzling in the other room.
Think so.
Right then, this week, we're going to be talking about Attack of the Cybermen. Might as well get straight on with it. Hey, I think there might be some disagreements in this particular story, but there you go.
Oh, really?
There might be, but there we are.
Why?
We'll find out, won't we?
And some vagueness for me, because I...
Yes?
There'll be some vagueness for me, because I only... saw half great. Of it again this time. I've seen most of I've seen it all before, but I've only seen half of it recently.
And you saw the best half.
Yeah.
Which half? The second half or the first half?
First.
No, oh, well. Okay, we start off in the sewers. Now that sounds familiar, doesn't it? In regards to the talons of Weng Chiang.
It's Al Hope here, isn't it?
Big pardon?
Oh, sorry.
Yeah, I
had the impression that it was supposed to be the same sewer. The same location as Talons.
Just general London sewers.
No, they were mentioning Fleet Street. Weren't they under Fleet Street for that one?
It might have been.
I don't remember.
Indeed. Never mind.
Yeah, I don't remember.
The Doctor, meanwhile, is, by the way, one of the... There was obviously the two men that were in the sewers get attacked by something, which obviously we must know it's a Tyburn because they conveniently called it Attack of the Cybermen and they get attacked, so you can...
Can I mention something about Cybermen at the moment? No, just because you know how when we get to the TARDIS, I think at the end of the first episode, obviously it's going to be the end of it. Well, we know how we see a different coloured Cyberman, like a darker coloured black sort of one.
Yep. Yes.
I don't remember anything specific about them in the televised show. But I remember reading about it that they were some sort of ones that were down in the sewers or something. I don't know, the special sorts of Cybermen that were scout Cybermen or something. I can't remember.
Mm.
Does anybody
scouts.
Else know anything about that? Yeah. Does anybody else know anything about that?
No, I don't, but somebody else might. Mm. Matthew usually does.
Well, actually, I don't
Matthew
know
knows everything.
About... It certainly seems that way.
Yes, it does.
I actually don't know anything further about it. It's, to me, it always seemed like this really kind of weird design thing. And then the fact that they only did it for one story makes it even more bizarre. But as to why they did it, I have no earthly idea.
This is just odd that they've got that Cyberman that's different in the TARDIS. It's really
there's
weird.
Like two scenes where it shows up and then it just never appears.
Yeah.
I think they were something to do with the ones in the sewers or something. If I remember from the book, this is just from the novel.
Now, trying to remember back to the invasion, aren't the Cybermen in the sewers in that story as well?
Yes, they are.
Yeah, this is the first of a series of, as Rhys would call them, homages. I prefer the term ripoff that you're going to find of 60 Cybermen stuff in this story.
Okay, right. It's quite interesting that we've done about five minutes of talking about the story, and we're about 1 minute into it. So
I just double checked. Yes, the sewers in Talons were the ones by the River Fleet. So that's definitely one of the homages.
Okay, can I get on now?
So, Matthew, if there are plenty of references or homages to the past in the 50th anniversary, are you going to call it a rip-off and not enjoy the episode, or are you going to enjoy the episode?
There's a difference between an homage and a rip-off, Reese. We talked about when we reviewed Hungry Earth, Cold Blood, that was a rip-off of a lot of Third Doctor era stuff. Sympathy for the Devil, the Doctor Who Unbound story with an alternate Third Doctor played by David Warner that touches on a lot of that is an homage. But we're getting off topic, and I can see Adam pulling what little hair he has left out listening to it.
Plenty of hair, thank you. Pulling his nostril
hair out now.
Right.
Yeah, leave that out of this.
Can I get on?
I don't know about that.
Can I get on now?
Get on with it!
Right. So the Doctor is repairing the chameleon circuit. And there's a little bit of an explosion.
That's a band, isn't it?
Sorry? Shut up.
It's a band, isn't it?
It is, yes. And Nicola...
It was interesting. It was interesting that they found the need to bring a sonic screwdriver substitute to this story.
Yeah. And that sort of just had the sonic screwdriver, AJNT. You wanted to get rid of it, then you realised you needed it. You berk. Right.
Yeah, but that's Eric Saber bringing it in, though.
Yes, never mind. Nicola Bryant is wearing a very fetching outfit. At least for the first part.
Anybody surprised that Adam noticed this?
I'm just a bit disappointed nobody's put any screenshots on the Nicholas Nork site from this episode, because she does look...
I noticed that too.
Nice.
I noticed it too.
Cold morning.
A typical of the 80s, they're both in day-glow colors.
And also she's wearing...
They explained somewhere why they had to do that. But she had shown up in that particular costume came from her, from the,
homeward
when she was going to her, some of the early things, she simply wore something like that, to rehearsals or something. But it was white leotard with blue shorts. Apparently they were thinking that combination with the Doctor's multicolored coat would really play havoc with the color balance. Not that they were already having problems with the color balance. So they had to make it show up as strong as his coat. And so the pink was better.
Wow. Well, they sure succeeded because she's bright.
Hmm. Oh, now the dog wants to come in.
Get in here.
I already let the cat in.
You let the dog out.
Come on, get in here now. Star. Oh, you're there.
Well, my cat keeps meowing because he wants to go outside, which I won't let him because it's still dark.
Right, anyway, what I got up to... So basically, Nicola Bryant is wearing what used to be called in the 1980s a bodysuit, and as Kirby correctly called it, a leotard. But in the 80s, they were bodysuits. Because I know that because Deb used to wear them.
You wore one.
Anyway,
she
used to wear black ones. Yes.
Adam wore the pink ones.
Yeah. They used to look particularly fetching on her. And off her, funny enough. Right then. So basically, now I'll tell you what, right? Before I move on, Nicola Bryant in this episode is a marked improvement in her acting between.
Oh, yes.
Obviously, we looked at the Planet of Death?
Fire,
that's it. Sorry, I'll never get the title of that one. And now, and she's really, she's great apart from the accent. She's really good in this. And
I'm surprised you noticed.
Well, that she's really good.
Her acting talent.
It's
far more natural. But what she hasn't lost is the, what are you doing now? What are you doing? Which is what she's
Very annoying. Yeah. Very annoying.
but she's so gorgeous. Yeah.
I find it as an annoying as a non-American. It must be worse for you Yanks.
Tell you what, was a really good effect when the Doctor flicks a switch and Perry puts an apple on the console deliberately for the effect, but the fact that when the camera flies, the apple goes off. So I think that was really well planned.
I noticed that.
Very good. I spoke about that as well.
But it's so deliberate, the way she looks at the apple, where she places it on the console. But she must place it in exactly the right spot.
Like kind of a giveaway.
Mm-hmm. Still worked well.
It did. No, I liked it. I just said I liked it.
Yeah. I know, but now you're picking on it.
I am picking on it. But anyway, we've meet Litten then and his group of cronies. And that's a well-cast group of cronies.
Yes.
Because Terry Malloy.
Oh. Yeah, Davros can walk.
Yeah.
He's lying.
It's a miracle. He can walk.
The bald-headed chap. I can't remember his name.
Griffiths.
Yeah, what's the actor's name?
Yes.
Brian Glover. Brian Glover, very well-known actor. He always used to play the sort of tough nuts type of roles in the 70s and 80s. And, of course, he was initially...
He's an English statement.
Yeah, he was initially in Kes, the first film from the 60s.
they always, every time his name came up in like the making of documentary or in the, as they were talking in the commentary, they'd make this point of, and he used to be a wrestler.
He did.
And an English teacher.
Yeah, he was a wrestler when he was a well-known actor. He used to appear on ITV Sports Wrestling as well. So, quite a character in himself, Brian Glover. Mm. No longer with us, of course. So, so the Doctor and Perry fly alongside Halley's Comet, which rather unrealistically has a rather glittering tail. and then she says she's scared, which is a bit silly because they're in the TARDIS and it can't really affect it.
Yes,
Then, of course, the...
I'm scared, Doctor.
The little crowd of villains that are planning to go into the sewers, I think.
That sounded like Tallulah from... the evolution of the Daleks.
It did.
Yes.
So they plan to go down to rob a building of some valuable products.
Heist,
yes. Meanwhile, the Doctor.
Now,
yes.
I had not seen Resurrection of the Daleks. I mean, I started watching it.
What?
So I had not seen Litten before.
Robert, are you okay?
And the whole business with I know now that he had the two cops with him in Resurrection and all that. But I didn't know that when I first saw this.
So the two police last week.
Yeah, and I still haven't seen it, so I didn't get that.
Mm. Well, the really bizarre thing is that the Doctor and Litten don't meet in Resurrection of the Daleks. So it's hard for the Doctor to have formed this kind of really negative opinion of Litten having never met him.
Yeah, but, Matthew, I can counter that by... Who was left at the end of... Oh, yeah. Turlough could have filled him in about Litten, really, and said, you know, Litten did this, blah, blah, blah. And so it could have been formed by that opinion, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, but also he could have met him but in a scene we didn't see. And there's other ways around it. But
yeah, that's how I... That's what I think.
I don't think it's a major problem. But, where do we get up to? Mm. The Doctor... lands the TARDIS somewhere in London after Perry moans about being scared about Halley's Comet.
Somewhere.
What I'm trying to allude to. Just bear with me in a moment. It's interesting to note that episode went out, Halley's Comet was actually in the sky. It's a little fuzzy thing I seem to remember. We're going out in the back garden with my binoculars. And the only way I've been... I know, it's very shocking, isn't it? The only way I've been able to see it was with some binoculars.
He is that old.
In the northern
You were supposed to be looking at the comet.
Yep.
at least that's what you told Deb, right?
No, this was 1986. I didn't know Deb in
1986. Oh, okay.
And she would have been about 15.
Then it's what you told your parents.
I wasn't living with my parents. I was living in a bedsit.
At 15?
No, Deb was 15. I was 21.
Anyway,
I think we're digressing slightly here.
slightly?
That's normal. What's so strange about that?
Welcome to the podcast.
Anyway, right. So the TARDIS materializes as a police box initially in a scrapyard, which is supposed to be a well-known scrapyard in the history of Doctor Who, and then it changes into a
woman.
Pardon?
Yeah, what does it change into?
A
what
strange
is that
cabinet.
Kind of thing?
I think we could all say it was a pretty useless cabinet, because I think it was quite large and had very small doors.
Looked like a French wardrobe or something.
When I've seen it described, it's described as a ornamental stove, but I don't understand that.
Oh, is
it? Looks like a clock without the clock face.
Yeah, the transcript I'm looking at the moment says highly...
Cheater!
Transcript!
It's not the bloody quiz! I can look at the transcript!
I think we found out what buttons to press when we want to annoy Matthew.
Oh, come on, get on with it.
So, what does it say in the script?
It says that the TARDIS changes into a highly ornamented dresser.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah, so a French wardrobe,
Can I move on now?
When I bring up the Wikipedia article, it says ornamental stove.
Well, can I move on then? I don't really.
Please,
it's not really that important to the plot, is it? What it materializes into initially. So can we move on instead of spending 10 minutes talking about it? Right. Be quiet. Now, the Doctor and Perry. There's a little, like a filler scene, a padding out scene that they're sort of walking through, and he's got a little machine that he's, you know, trying to find whatever he's trying to find with. Now, obviously, this
he's walking,
you can take that whole scene out of the story and not lose anything.
But Perry was running. Come on.
Yes. I actually really enjoyed the interaction between the two. I quite like the scene itself. So I'm glad that it's in there, even though it is blatantly, obviously, padding.
I like the point where Perry jumps in front of him, kind of this, look at me, I'm here. Pay attention.
Yes.
Adam wasn't here.
Is that because certain things are bouncing up and down while she's doing that? Or?
Yes.
knees. Right?
Okay.
Am I right?
Her hair.
Meanwhile, the little villains are down in the
I liked it from a dramatic, from its use in the story.
Yes, okay.
Yeah.
The Doctor arrives at a sign that says I.M. Foreman, 76 Totters Lane. Now, is that the one where the spelling's wrong? Or that was in Remembrance of the Daleks?
No, this one's right.
Yeah. Remembrance,
The one in Remembrance is wrong.
Yeah, someone's a bit of a twit then, aren't they, really, when it comes to... Well, then, very good story. Yeah, go on.
I have we seen a sign from the 50th anniversary show where, since they're going back there again, hopefully they will spell it correctly.
No spoilers, then, eh?
Oh.
Spoilers!
I had no idea that was happening.
It'd be so good.
It'd be good if I actually spelled it wrong.
Yes, you did.
No,
I did. We've discussed it before when they first showed the... La, 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 la.
Are you sure that's a 50th anniversary or just the documentary drama thing?
That was the 50th anniversary.
Never mind. What's that smell?
Okay.
Food. Might have farted. Anyway.
Yeah.
So meanwhile, the Doctor and Perry jump back in the TARDIS after having a bit of trouble finding the door. And
they walk behind it, you mean?
Yeah.
But have I missed the bit with the policeman? That was really good. Oh, yeah. No, we haven't had that bit yet. Sorry. No, I quite like the scene with the policeman. One of the
when they suddenly appear,
one of the villains gets killed by the Cybermen in the sewer, and then of course they reappear, and the Doctor plays a little tune by, I think it was Bach, wasn't it,
it's the beginning of the Toccata in D minor.
It is indeed. Yes. And I thought about putting that as a question in the quiz, but I thought, nah, that's too easy. And also, what I did like about it,
Everyone keeps saying Toccata and Fugue. Mm. They've not gotten to the Fugue part yet, people.
Can I move on?
Okay.
Kirby.
Yes.
Settle down.
I quite like the bit when he played the tune on it, the incidental music then continued it for a little bit. I quite like
that. I know,
that.
Yeah. Really
good. Yeah. Yeah, that was a nightmare. And then the only time the music was good.
Then I'll have that moment after that where he nearly walks in the hole and then he just steps over it.
Yes.
That was really good. I mean, but as I say, they've clearly got a really good rapport, Nicola Bryant and Colin Baker, and you can see that. And of course, Nicola Bryant throws some sand in the policeman's eye, and there's the expression on the policeman's face when obviously the helmet comes up from the pit, and he looks all really pleased with himself, and suddenly he realizes now, the doctor's underneath
it. What are these policemen from Resurrection? Are they Cybermen? Are they
Lytton's agents?
Yeah, they're just part of Lytton's gang.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, why don't they talk?
Exactly. Maybe I haven't got enough money to pay them.
Because the script didn't give them any lines. they were just visual.
To keep them mysterious.
Right then. So
I thought. I think they're Dalek replicants, to be honest, but that's just my opinion.
I'd say so.
Well, and extremely passive, because Perry can walk him over to that little thing and he sits right down, and they handcuff him. He doesn't protest or fight or anything. I don't know, in that moment, he just is too passive.
There's a blackboard behind him that, obviously, in modern Who, and if it was a Stephen Moffat story, everybody would think, oh, those words are very significant. Heavy, number two, gun.
Yes,
that
would be true.
Or lead. But clearly they weren't. Yes. Yet, anyway, maybe Moffat can make them significant.
Bloody Moffat. No.
There we go. Another homage. I mean,
good grief.
Now, for this, when I was watching, I seem to remember this. I had a little bit of flashback while watching this, because I quite liked Colin Baker initially anyway. But for this is he became the Doctor during these scenes for me, and that's why I like him so much as the Doctor. The only thing I do not like about Colin Baker is the suit, and in fact, he's saying whenever he introduces himself, he says he's Noon as the Doctor, whereas all the other doctors would just say, I'm the Doctor.
I don't
and he
like
did say
either.
I'm the Doctor in it. But his Doctor specifically said, I am Noon as the Doctor.
Yeah.
But that's his little...
I didn't notice that.
Yeah, I didn't notice that.
Watching Colin Baker stories. Every time he introduces himself, he says, I am Noon as the Doctor.
And does he say it like that? I'm Noon as the Doctor.
I'm Noon.
Push the dial.
It's his accent. He does.
Hard. Without falling through. Push.
Hard.
There we go.
That's what she said.
I want to record something because I'm bored.
Sorry?
I said I wanted to record something because I'm bored. On demand.
What do you want to record on demand?
A movie.
Yeah. Well, not now, darling, because I'm trying to do this and you keep interrupting me, don't you? Just put your telly channels on. I've got to come out in a minute. It's got the dog's dinner.
There's
actually more
no
on now.
Films on.
Teletubbies
go
on.
Go to one of the film channels. You'll probably find there is something on.
No.
Never mind, eh?
Teletubby cyber controller?
Come on. What do you expect me to do about
it? They're boring.
What do you expect me to do about it?
I don't want to watch them.
I've just asked a question three times. Let's try it a fourth time. What do you expect me to do about it?
Tell her to watch Doctor Who.
Record a movie.
What movie?
I want to watch one.
What movie? For the 15th time.
I'll choose one.
Right, I've now got to try and find a film for Isabella to watch.
Goodness.
Yeah, the Bleeding Cool article about the 50th anniversary shows that the Tatters Lane thing is... It's
all
for
right.
the 50th anniversary.
Talking about that about.
Although they might, I bet you they also use that for the Adventures in Time and Space, Space and Time.
Well, they'd have to.
Oh yeah, they would.
Yeah,
they'd have to.
But
Kirby,
the other...
didn't you get from the fact that sign was just kind of haphazardly tacked on there that this was just to make a reference and it really wasn't anything?
Yeah, they should have taken the time to make the real sign.
Yeah, but that would have cost money.
Yeah.
Which they were obviously trying to save.
Yeah. They did that in the music department too.
Yeah.
Oi, leave Malcolm Clark alone, please, Reese.
Yeah, I'm not insulting him. It's just the music's crap.
There, I put the link in the
I'm sorry, but an atmospheric scene where there's a heist going on and music's going
As I said on Facebook, it's a Malcolm Clark score, so according to Reese, it's not actually music.
Well, I agree now.
This was music. It was. It was better than
Sea
Devils.
It was
anyway.
Just noise.
It's better than Sea Devils, admit that.
Well, in episode one, anyway, it was always kind of clown like music, or the bo de boop bo do. It's like everybody is being silly. So it was hard to take anything seriously.
Yeah, I mean, his you know, he's got a great theme for the Cybermen, which is a reprise from his Earth Shock.
Excellent. But, yeah, I do like that.
Excellent.
Yeah, his other, the other music in this story is just kind of,
Although they considered the music in this story to be good enough that they created a special music only track on the DVD.
Yeah. Well,
that's because they could. Whether they should.
No, every DVD has a music track.
Kirby, there's a reason for
this. I'm saying because they were able to, because they had the separate tracks to be able to do it. Doesn't mean they should have.
Exactly. As Robert said, in a lot of cases, particularly the early scores, a lot of Dudley Simpson stuff and everything up from basically An Unearthly Child through Horns of Nymon, they don't have most of
Nymon!
Good grief.
I'm
Adam Fields now. I really do. But they don't have a lot of the original tapes where the stuff was recorded. And then they would record the music, they dub it onto the episode, it would sit around for a bit, and then they would record over it again. A bit like what happened with the original tapes with a lot of the episodes from the 60s.
And I have a question for those of you who keep track of continuity. If during this episode we learn that they're trying to prevent or bring back Mondas, isn't time-wise in 10th Planet, doesn't that take place at the same time or in the same time period?
1986.
Yeah, 10th Planet is set about
a year after this.
Yeah.
So Mondas shouldn't be destroyed yet, right?
Right. What they're trying to do is crash – we're jumping ahead, but what they're trying to do is crash Halley's Comet into Earth.
Yeah.
Halley affects that.
Halley, thank you. To wipe out – to damage – to weaken the human population and stuff so that when Mondas shows up in 1986, they're able to carry out the plan they tried to do in 10th Planet without Mondas getting blown to smithereens.
Yeah. Where have we got up to?
But they're already talking about Mondas having been destroyed, aren't they?
Yeah. Well, what's happened is
from their point
of
view, they've got a time machine.
Yeah, it's the history of the Cybermen, as David Banks wrote in his book on the Cybermen, has become incredibly convoluted, particularly because of the stories here in the 80s, particularly Earthshock onwards, where time travel starts coming into play. And what this appears to be is that these are Cybermen from the future. Who have come back to the past.
Cybermen from the future.
Who
have come back to the past to try and prevent the events of the 10th Planet from happening.
Okay, I guess I didn't catch the part where they were from the future.
Can I get on now, or are we just going to be going round in circles for the next 2 hours?
No, we were just straightening out a bit of continuity here.
We've been discussing the story while you've been
screaming. That's what I'm trying to ask. Where are we up to?
The Doctor and Perry have just gone into the sewers.
Oh, that was ages ago. Oh, my God. Right, so, yeah.
Drama queen.
Pardon?
He's still in Isabella mode.
Yeah.
Yes.
She's just been awkward. She nearly, she said, I want to download something on Catch Up. Of course, if I do that, that's going to take up all the bandwidth and Skype call drop out. Yeah. So.
Not good.
Unfortunately, that's the way it goes, isn't it? She's just been awkward.
Did you sort her out?
Yeah, I gave a good belting. I was joking, listeners.
Quite right. I'm joking too.
She's very good at the guilt tripping, though, I must admit. I don't know where she gets that from. Maybe it's
we can hear.
Yeah.
Anyway, do like winding her up, though, sometimes. I don't know why. I think it's just the only way I can get my own back on them. Lytton is caught, isn't he? Gets caught by the Cybermen. That sounds a bit painful. Lytton and Griffiths get caught by the Cybermen. Meanwhile, now, there's a scene. I don't know if
I ask Reese a question real quick?
Yeah.
You watched the four-part version of this story. Where was the part one cliffhanger?
Just as this shadowy figure is following the Doctor and Perry in the sewers. Yeah.
Four-part version? What do you mean, four-part version?
This was shown as a four-part
version. When even they released it here? When they released it here, it was originally a four-parter because that's the way that they showed it. There was no.
If that's the way they showed it on PBS here. I wasn't watching the show at this point. I didn't see any Six Doctor stories show up after the 2005.
Shut up!
So I don't know how they were showing it on PBS.
They were showing it in four parts. Because what I read was that it was shown in England in the 2 45-minute slots, but then their overseas sales, which were very strong, were set up in markets that wanted the half hour. So they had to film
Didn't they show it in all of Britain and not just England?
Yeah.
Well, maybe. Yeah. I don't know. But I just read where their overseas markets wanted it in half-hour slots. So they had to record it for those, but then break it into two pieces for the British market.
I like the 45-minute episodes. It works well, I think.
Yeah.
I don't know. But I have the pace to it to keep it at 45 minutes.
Yeah.
Well, that's true. That's true.
The story very much had the feeling like it was a script of 4 25-minute episodes. Where they glued two episodes together, and it feels like the moment. And that's the reason, Adam, why I asked the question about that scene, because that feels like that would have been a natural cliffhanger. That was why I asked the question.
They did film it for the four episodes,
Which scene was... Never mind the cat.
What's up with your cat, Mary?
Wants food, I
suppose. I told you earlier that this cat's going to keep caterwauling because it wants to go outside because I must.
Really?
But it's too early. It's too dark outside. We've got skunks in our neighborhood.
What part did you think was the natural cliffhanger?
When Litton and Griffiths are captured by the Cybermen. The Cybermen bends the gun and Griffiths tries to run off. And he screams. And given the way the JNT era cliffhangers worked was you did a close-up on a character and then you cue in the Doctor Who theme. And that seemed like, and they did a close-up of him screaming and it was like, that feels like that would have been a cliffhanger.
Yeah.
And it's at the right time in the story to do it as well.
Yeah, most cliffhangers though either involve the Doctor or the Doctor's companion. Most of them. So... You never know. Could be. Right. So one thing I missed because of you lot and Isabella and all the other things, there was a scene where we first see the two prisoners and they were supposed to knock off the Cyberman's head, but the bloke fails to do it and they run off. Now, the bloke who tried to knock off the Cyberman's head was a long-time unit stuntman. But could I find his name anywhere on the internet? No, I couldn't. So I don't know who it was, but he's been in... No, we watched Ambassadors of Death. I'm pretty sure he was in that.
Oh, and I've got several books.
You mean Payne and Stratton?
No, the other one. I don't know his name. Oh. The one that gets killed, anyway. Gets killed while the other two run off.
Bates and Stratton.
Yeah.
Bates is played by Michael Atwell.
No,
the other guy who was supposed to join them. There were supposed to be three of them. He got killed.
He gets killed, yes. And he knocks into the camera as he's rolling down the embankment. That one. Now
He doesn't even, because he doesn't have any lines, he's not credited,
he doesn't have a
name.
He's not even in any literature in regards to, you know.
What's his name as the thing? Because I've got a list here.
I was just trying to explain. I don't know his name. That's what I was looking it up.
Maybe it's in, Matthew's script.
It's not. I'm looking at that scene.
Have you ever get to the stage where you wish you hadn't brought anything up? Meanwhile, the Doctor and Perry get caught by Davros. I mean, Terry
Davros,
Malloy.
Yes.
Who is actually a policeman. Because initially when he said, who are you? And he said, I'm a policeman. I thought, he's just saying that he's not. And he was actually an undercover policeman.
I thought he was telling the truth.
Pardon?
I thought he was telling the truth about.
Not when he first said it. I thought he was just sort of saying it because he's.
No, I thought he did because of the way he was acting.
But initially when when I watched it and they're all three together,
I think you were fooled.
Yeah, I thought he was just saying it. He wasn't actually a policeman. Then I realised after a couple of couple of minutes maybe that he actually. Oh yeah, he was a policeman.
Yeah, Pat Gorman was a Cyberman in this.
What?
Cyberman.
Who?
Yeah.
Pat Gorman was a Cyberman in one of these.
Okay.
So.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway, I'll just say the two prisoners, the one that the moody one, I thought he played the plot quite well, but I found him very annoying. Stratton, was it? Very annoying character. Just very aggressive. Yeah,
and when he keeps shouting.
Yeah, he's a bit like a skinhead Hardnut from the 80s, you know, something like the Sexist. Yeah. I just didn't like him. Yeah, as a character.
He just kept screaming, and that got very annoying.
I was quite pleased when he eventually got done in. So I thought, oh, good. Because he wasn't very nice. I know, maybe.
Everyone, carry on. I have got to step away for a few minutes.
Oh, okay. Okay. What have we done to upset him?
Yeah, I'm sorry.
Yeah. Anyway, right. So there's lots of very dark, dingy lighting, obviously, when they're down in the... sewer, and also because obviously when
well lit, I
the,
thought
the cyber, yeah, the little cyber base in the what do you call it, sewers as well, are quite dark, yeah, darkly lit, which is quite unusual for Doctor Who of this. I know obviously the sewers are going to be darkly lit, but you know the fact that they did the difference between the sewer cyber base and the Telos cyber base, obviously the Telos cyber base is quite well lit, so that's that way they were able to distinguish between the two. I know it's quite shocking, Robert, but that was actually the case.
It's nice that they decided to do videotape with a little more mood lighting.
Yes.
Usually videotape is all brightly lit and flat looking. Yeah.
Well, apparently the lighting guys were saying, oh, it's too low, but for a change, the director won out. So.
Yeah.
Anyway, so eventually they do get to knock a Cyberman's head off. And, of course, like bit where he says you've got to scoop out the insides of it.
Yeah.
It off,
yeah.
I thought it was quite
they
good.
Can wear their... Yeah.
Yeah.
But then later on in the episode, the Doctor sort of undoes the front of a Cyberman's head and, you know, it's all... Well, there's nothing, well, there's nothing to nothing scoop but out.
Right. Just mechanics.
Yeah.
Of course, we've seen...
Distress signal.
We've seen since that, obviously, there's a head inside there, or a brain at least.
Or at least with the new series, Cyberman.
Yeah, but I'm sure there was a Cyberman from this era that had a sort of see-through head, and we could see its brain. Well, maybe I'm wrong.
Can't remember.
But you could see the partially converted Cybermen in the base. You know, we're human, so
and also
imply that there were heads in there.
The Cybermen in Earthshock, I think you could see their mouths, couldn't you, for a transparent?
Yeah, they had the
thing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they had the transparent chins.
Yeah, they just
so you could see who was talking.
So
transparent chins.
The Doctor and Perry and Terry Marrow go onto the TARDIS where there is Cybermen already on board. I don't know how they got on board, but they get on board.
Yeah,
they left the door open.
Did they?
That mystified me how they got in there.
Oh, yeah, me too.
They needed a cliffhanger.
Right. Now this is quite interesting. This sort of scene because obviously. They shoot the Cyberman quite violently, very close range, and the back of its head falls off. There's one that staggers through the TARDIS door from the corridor end, and there's a wire attached to it, which I noticed straight away before rewinding it and rewatching it just to make sure I got it right. Obviously, the wire was there for some sort of explosive reason, I would have guessed, but...
These Cybermen... seem very vulnerable. Seems like everything kills them.
Yeah, everything. Apart from gold. This is very unusual in this episode. The gold doesn't get mentioned once, I don't think.
No. But they can get blasted. They can get stabbed. They can get their heads knocked off. I mean, they just seem like they're vulnerable to everything.
Mary, just wait till you see Silver Nemesis.
I did see Silver Nemesis.
The cliffhanger is Perry just about to get... punched by a Cyberman. Surely shooting her would probably be... Yeah. Also, whatever happened to the TARDIS, the system where you can fire off weapons inside? There was...
The temporal grace. Temporal grace. Yeah.
Did they turn that off as well?
The plot. That's what I know.
One thing I did like was the fact that when that shot through the corridor, when the Cyberman does come through, you know, you can see some sort of interior of the TARDIS through that door. It's quite nice. Quite tantalising.
You and your glimpses of the TARDIS.
I do like to think of it beyond the console room. You know, the Doctor then sets a countdown destruction timer, which is, again, that happened someone else, didn't it?
Yeah.
Some episode we watched quite recently.
Journey to the Center of the TARDIS.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Was it? Was it that one? Because I remember saying, was it 20 seconds or was it 15 seconds or however long it was? Was it really that one or was it another one?
Oh, that was a Planet of Fire.
That's right, yeah, Planet of Fire.
At the end.
Yeah, yeah. It was Turlo. Yeah. So it was not self-destruct, it was a delayed takeoff thing. Yeah.
The delayed dematerialization.
Yeah. On this occasion, it was slightly longer than 20 seconds, so it should really have blown up. But obviously... When they're in a place that's slightly cut off from time, I suppose it's got its own little. You know.
He could have been making things up though, and just put the egg timer on.
Right, right,
yeah.
And say, I suspected it was really just a countdown to blow it up. Yeah. It's not an egg timer.
Yeah. Although that did remind me of the gag in Journey to the Center of the TARDIS, where he said, "You've got half an hour. You've got 15 minutes, or something like that."
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Now the Cyber Control with all the computers and the stuff in the background was quite reminiscent of an earlier period of Doctor Who. So they must have borrowed some old sets really for this. I'll tell you what, the chap who played the Cyber Controller, obviously played it in the Tomb of the
Michael Kilgareth,
the fat controller.
In fact, he was quite chubby, wasn't he? But I'll tell you what, his movements were very. He really did put the sort of robotic cyber movements into his performance, which I thought was really, really good.
Yes.
They should have padded up his chest, though, or bulk up his top half so his fat gut didn't look so fat.
Yeah, but I don't mind that. Knowing that, you know, they've brought back a sort of somebody who's played some really good parts in Doctor Who history to play this one. It was a bit pointless, really, because they had the cyber leader, didn't they? But the fact that I thought his performance was really quite... good. He really put a lot of thought into it.
Yeah.
More so than he
did in
Tomb.
Speaking of putting thought into things.
Yes.
I can't remember what scene it was, but Stratton is being talked to by the Cybermen and one of them grabs his shoulder and he winces when it happens. Yeah. And I thought that not many people would have thought to do that, but I thought it was quite well done.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I noticed
what
that.
What was?
What?
Stratton what wincing was? When he's grabbed on
Welcome
the shoulder
back,
by a Cyberman.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, there's lots of good little sort of performances in this story.
Touches.
And I'll reiterate what I said about Nicola Bryan. I thought she was really much, much better in this. And I think it's a shame she couldn't quite get a handle on the accent. Because she...
No, the handles were on the Cybermen helmets.
She's,
I thought you could have said somewhere else there, Kirby.
She was quite good at imitating the California nasality when she talks.
She what, sorry?
That we're talking is very California.
Yeah, it's like she's doing what the UK thinks is a generalized American accent.
Yeah, of course.
Because in real life, doesn't bear any resemblance to any American.
I suspect it's based on like the younger characters that would have been in Dynasty, or as you would call it, Dynasty in Dallas, because obviously those are the most popular.
I always called it Dynasty, but I'm weird.
Well, didn't she spend some time in California?
Who?
Nicola Bryan.
No idea.
I don't think so. I know she was dating. Apparently, she dated somebody from the U.S., which is where she picked, at least tried to pick the accent off of.
Ah.
Oh,
okay.
From, and she apparently impressed John Nathan Turner, and then when John Nathan Turner found out she was British, insisted she had to keep using the American accent at all times for publicity and stuff because he didn't want anybody to know she was British.
It's not very, very difficult.
As, what's his name? Hugh Laurie with House.
Indeed. Anyway, so they are heading for Mondas, I believe. Is that right? No, Telos. Sorry, they're heading for Telos.
No, they're heading for Telos.
Mondas is destroyed. They're heading for
Telos.
While
I was away, I assume...
We are telling you.
Did someone mention the fat controller?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yes.
And who he is?
Yes. Yes.
Yes.
Yes.
So,
sorry.
Unfortunately,
are you feeling irrelevant, Kirby?
Unfortunately, Nicola Bryan.
There's also the robot in robot.
Okay. Right. The TARDIS materialises. So, as I was saying, it's very disappointing that Nicola Bryan changes into some sort of bright red boiler suit because obviously it's not as revealing as the suit she had been wearing. The TARDIS materialises on the spaceship. I think it's a gate, isn't it?
Yes.
It
opens right away, so it's kind of hard to tell.
You know what? I remember when, before this episode went out, a massive rumour went out that the TARDIS was no longer going to be a police box permanently.
I know.
So, and that was quite clever, because when this episode went out, I believed that to be the case.
Can I talk about this?
Yes.
No. Okay.
What happened seems to have been, based on what John Nathan Turner said in his memoirs and what's on the info text on this DVD, is that at Colin Baker's first photo call, John Nathan Turner, kind of thinking aloud, mentioned the idea, and that newspapers being newspapers picked it up and ran with it. And John Nathan Turner and the publicity people suddenly thought, wouldn't it be brilliant if we played this rumor out for a while that we were going to do this? And then they turned around and then supposedly leaked plans and all that and then said, oh, we're not going to do it. And then turned around and started putting it into the episode just to freak the fans out.
Yes. And we thought Moffat was so original.
Yeah.
Well, they did actually have a rumor this year on April the 1st about that, saying that it's no longer going to be a police box.
Mm. Oh, that's right. They did. I remember that.
Yeah, back in 86, I remember hearing, I wasn't paying a lot of attention to the show at the time and was not able to watch it. Well, okay. 85. Well, Holly's comment was 86. Anyway.
Yes.
And
anyway.
Also, we probably wouldn't have gotten it in the States until 86 anyway.
Same here. Same here, Kirby.
So. But I wasn't paying a lot of attention to Doctor Who news
and
things.
It's in the cupboard above the sink.
No, I can't.
And it's coming.
You heard that, Kirby? You heard it?
That's what I'm coming.
But I actually had heard the rumor about the TARDIS no longer being the police
box. We did here in Australia, too.
And if it filtered down to me in my not really watching a whole lot or hearing a whole lot, then it was big news.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Must be pretty sensational.
Yeah.
News took a long time to travel. I know going to conventions and listening to panels where fans from the 80s are talking, it would be like,
no internet.
no internet, and something would happen, and then 2 years later, it would be big news in the local club newsletter. Because news took so long to travel.
And especially as we know, Doctor Who. Doctor Who used to be shown a year or so after it would be broadcast in the UK around the world. So as Kirby was saying, I think I watched this in 1986, not 1985.
Right. So we're on Telos and there's a rogue Cyberman.
We are telling you.
Around the running around the thing. So the Doctor.
I like the idea of that rogue Cyberman. I think it's a good idea.
Yeah.
Yeah. They're not defrosting correctly or something.
Perry gets rescued by some Kryons. Now, I do get a bit confused by this because they go out in the corridor, rescue her, yet they don't sort of burn up.
I know. Right, that's what I can't understand too. Yeah. And then the other one.
Yeah, she gets thrown out in the corridor.
Because it's going to boil.
Yeah.
Explain that.
I think I can.
Go on.
We know the tombs are supposed to be frozen and that it is cold in there. They make a big point about saying the tombs are freezing. Whereas the corridor outside where Flask or whatever her name is.
Yeah, Flask.
Is one being of them, held. The room she's being held in is freezing, but the corridor outside is not. Yeah. So they can walk around in the tombs, but they can't go rescue her because she's being kept in a cell somewhere else.
And in the commentary, they said that opposite, they had to do a lot of cold acting because it was actually very, very hot in the studio.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Not very convincing cold acting.
Summer,
acting
wasn't
either.
It?
Was
no.
it?
Right, no. They remember it and then forget it.
Yes. Yes.
Colin Baker makes a, in the commentary, says that he did not do the cold acting because the doctor would have been pretty much immune.
But he did
anyway.
Do some cold acting when he was in with...
Oh, that's right, he did.
Yes. When he's in with Flask.
Flask, that's it.
And Chuck, I've got a continuity thing with that. When he was the fifth Doctor, he goes outside in the freezing space Water Doomsday, and he's all right, and yet he's complaining, I'm going
to
be dead within half an hour. Ooh.
Right. I've got a way to answer that. His body changes when he regenerates.
He's still a bloody Time Lord who's supposed to.
It becomes more sensitive, though.
It's different writers than Terence Dudley who wrote Fort of Doomsday probably wasn't thinking about it.
Right. Okay. Never mind. Let's not dwell on it for too long.
Aww, that's what annoying, we do. Though.
That's what you do, Kirby. That's what you do.
Well, I just did it too, Reese.
That's what she said.
You were.
Anyway, right, so... Sorry, you might be able to hear Isabella grizzling in the background because Alicia's hijacked the television. Right. So anyway, Lytton and Griffiths sort of make their escape briefly before Lytton gets recaptured and then gets interrogated and then gets tortured and then gets sort of, you know, turned into a cyber person type thing. The Doctor, meanwhile, gives Flask, is it? The be quiet, stop grizzling.
Flask.
Yeah, I am the sonic lance, so she can blow up the highly volatile substance that is going to, blow up the Cybermen. I quite like the idea of that substance.
The icing sugar.
Yeah, but sugar. Why would they imprison her in a room full of explosives?
Right.
Because you have to heat the room up for the stuff to explode. Yeah. So if they're keeping it at temperature where it's freezing, it's not going to blow up. It's when it starts reaching room temperature that it
explodes. Yeah, but you know what's stupid? The Doctor says, I better not breathe on this, otherwise I'm going to explode it. And all it takes would be some hot breath.
Yeah,
so,
the other thing that got me was
they also apparently he was scripted to pick up the explosive in his hand, and they thought better of that. And that's why he uses a little scoop.
That's fine. But what got me
But then they leave that probe in there for the longest time before
That's what
it,
she said.
It's
Mary always comes up with him, doesn't she?
Yes.
That's what she said.
Right. Now, what got me was, you know, they're all quite touchy-feely, these cryons. So that I would have thought the surface temperature of a human being would be well above 15 degrees.
Yes.
Whatever it is.
Yep. Yet
they were touching them. Surely they'd get burned, wouldn't they? You'd get scalded a little bit by touching a person.
Melted a little anyway, or
you would think.
But
Sarah Berger replaced.
Go ahead.
Sarah Berger on the commentary explains that one of the on the commentary and in the Cold War, the Making of documentary, explains that the reason that they ended up being that way was because they couldn't see hardly because of the masks, and that they were using it to kind of navigate their way around and to know where each other, where their fellow actors and each other were.
There you go. Right, I'll tell you what was quite gruesome. Now, you don't often see a lot of blood in Doctor Who. Obviously, when they crushed Lytton's hands, his hands are all bloody and there was blood on the floor. And a lot of the time they do shooting and stuff like that. There's no blood whatsoever. So that's what sort of stood out to me a little bit, that she took the effort to use blood in the story. That went quiet, didn't it? One of the Cybermen had his boots tied up in a very strange way, halfway up his leg as well. I hadn't noticed that until just pausing the scene.
Didn't notice it at all.
Poor old Lytton. What a way to go.
Notice what?
What? The way that Cyberman had his boots, sort of his laces were tied halfway up his leg. They were around his leg and up his
sort of... Which one was that? I didn't notice that.
When Lytton's on the ground and you see him sort of all cowered down and all with blooded and stuff like that, you see the Cybermen's feet and one of them had its laces tied sort of wrapped up its leg. Yeah. Not that interesting.
I have another question. If the Cybermen were going to use that substance to blow up Talos, they would destroy Talos and they would destroy the substance and then they wouldn't have it anymore, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, did they say that was some precious...
Just one of the many little debatable... topics in this particular story. Right.
Yeah, exactly.
The Cybermen's plan seems to be to use the time ship to go back in time and use Halley's Comet to destroy the Earth, then apparently sit there until Mondash shows up, but having blown up Telos, the Cryons, and everything else in between. It's a plan that... Like most of the Cybermen's plans, in fact, makes very little sense when you start to think about it.
Yeah, it defies logic. Yeah,
it does. Okay. Yes, but never
mind. I just wondered if I was the only one that wondered about that.
Yeah,
okay.
So, like I say, the Doctor and Perry and some Cryons are out in the corridor. The Cryons are fine. The doctor gets sets off a distress signal inside one of the sort of deactivated Cybermen, which then tempts all the other Cybermen out of the TARDIS, and then one of the Kryons gets shot. That's quite a good effect, actually, when the Kryon got shot, because the sort of strange sort of visual thing looked a little bit
like
Time Lord energy, but white. It's a similar sort of... had a wispy effect to it, which
kind of vaporized.
Yeah,
I thought she was melting.
It was a good effect.
So,
what is the word you use, like when an ice cube doesn't exactly melt?
Sublimate.
Sublimate. That's what it looked like it was happening.
Yeah. So anyway, right.
There you go, my sublimate.
Meanwhile, the villains meet their comeuppance. Now, when I saw this scene, I thought, well, this is always going to happen to them. It seemed a bit pointless in the end. And, you know, the fact that they just arrive, the moody one gets electrocuted, and then Griffiths and Stratton or Bates gets killed.
Yeah.
So
Bates.
That was a very high death count in this story.
Asta.
Yeah, and it just, you know, they're good characters, and I think they've got some of the best stuff in the story, but frankly, they're padding. They don't serve any purpose to the story whatsoever.
And that death part of it does rather illustrate that they aren't really needed in the story at all.
Well, you know, Eric Sayward goes on in the making of documentary about it's, you know, he goes, they've struggled in all this, and it's all sad, and it's poignant, and I was like, have you seen what you wrote?
Yes.
What's been made of what you wrote?
So, yes, the doctor then finds out that Lytton's been working for the Kryons and feels, oh, God, I've misjudged him, blah, blah, blah. And she goes to try and rescue him. The Lytton then saves the doctor from getting done in by the cyber controller who the doctor murders in cold green blood. Yeah. And then makes his getaway, really. And that essentially is how the story ends, with the doctor saying that he's never misjudged anybody like he misjudged Lytton. But he didn't really misjudge Lytton, because he was a bit naughty in the resurrection of the Daleks.
Oh, he's a bit naughty.
He really could have been a bit naughtier in this if things had gone his way. But there you go. Right, so this story, I generally start about what I think of it. There are a lot of things in it that don't make sense, but that doesn't matter because it's a science fiction fantasy TV show. I think they really did go a bit off track on a few things. But what is so? I mean, the story itself's okay.
It's all right.
It's okay. It's quite entertaining. But the more you watch it, the more you pick up on the things that don't make sense. If I'd had time, I would have made lists. But it's much better than Twin Dilemma. I know we haven't watched this yet, but as a follow-up story for Colin Baker.
Twin Dilemma?
We haven't watched it on the show yet. As a follow-up story to Twin Dilemma, I think, you know, it's okay. Colin Baker is fantastic. Nicola's pretty good.
Yeah.
The rest of the cast is pretty good.
Nicholas Watts are pretty good.
The rest of the cast are very good.
I'm glad you missed that.
This is it's just an okay story. But I must admit, when I like it, and I feel that I shouldn't because everybody else hates it. But I quite enjoy it because I think
who hates it?
There's lots of people that don't like Attack of the Cybermen. It's not very highly regarded, and I can see why, because we've illustrated with the plot
holes. The top DWM top 200. List of a few years ago, Attack of the Cybermen is listed at number 161, but I disagree with their they have things below that which are I think really, really good. Like Delta and the Bannerman, they have at 180.
Talking over each other again. Is that that naughty Reese? Should I deduct a point from Reese for talking over Kirby then?
Yes.
Yes. And also because I'm going to be rubbish in the quiz anyway, there's going to be no points.
Just trying to give yourself excuses, aren't you?
They do the DWM top 200 list does have Twin Dilemma as number 200. So they are correct there.
Okay. Yeah. Well, basically, I'm trying to find. I'm trying to find a reason not to like it. I'm just probably easily pleased. I've already illustrated how much I love Doctor Who, and it's very difficult for me, apart from a couple of stories, to say that I really hate it. And I quite like this one, despite its faults. But there's a lot. There's quite a lot of episodes I've said that about. They do have their faults sometimes, but they're okay. I like this one. Go on then. Who should go for? Hang on. Let's see who's sort of next on my screen. First one I see is going to be Reese. What do you think?
We're going, Reese. Tell us what you. Oh, right, me.
You.
Well, I have to admit that there's a cock up in my planning for this, and I thought I had another hour to watch it. So I've only seen the first half lately. I've seen it all before, but I can only remember the first half pretty clearly. But from what I remember, I thought it was quite good, and it was the first classic Who Cyberman story I saw, and I quite liked it. It had some nice cyber ideas in it. And I think it's okay, but there are many issues with it, and I'm sure Matthew knows what issues there are with it. I don't know. I thought Colin Baker was fantastic, except for his god-awful costume. I think if they'd gone for the Christopher Eccleston look, which is the kind of thing he wanted, I think that it would have worked just a whole lot more better in terms of that didn't sound right in terms of English, but never mind. It would have worked a lot better. It would have worked a lot more
credibility,
better.
The word you're looking for?
Yeah, maybe. It would have had more credibility with people, and they would have been able to see his excellent performance without having to put up with something like his costume.
Excellent.
Yes, I think it was excellent. But yeah, it was an okay story. Colin Baker was fantastic, or excellent. Nicola Bryant was also very good, and not just because of the costume she wore in the first half. I quite liked it. It wasn't brilliant. It wasn't completely terrible either. So somebody else go now.
Right, have you done, Reese?
Yep, I'm done.
Right, Robert.
Reese has been done. Oh, yes. I quite like it. As I said, we originally watched it in Australia in a four-parter, and it was quite funny when I got the VHS and actually saw it as a 45-minute. It seemed a bit long, I don't know, at times. That's what she said.
I actually agree with that. I think that it works with New Who to have it 45 minutes because it's got the pace of a modern television show, but they didn't.
Yes.
Like Matthew said, this feels like a four-parter, 25-minute episodes with two of them stuck together twice.
Yeah. I don't think they'd quite worked out the format. As even like when you take something like The Two Doctors, which would be an old six-parter because it's 3-45 minutes long, and that is quite long. That's what she said. But I actually like the first half more than I like the second half. I don't think the Cryons really worked, and they must have had their hand movements directed by Rosalind de Winter, who did the Web Planet movement. Bates and Stratton were essentially just distractors. They didn't really have much to do. But I did like the Cybermen dismemberment scenes. But they could have cut it a bit quickly because they sort of had like a Cyberman on his knees and he's sort of like, come on, I'll wait here while you get ready to line up to chop my head off kind of thing.
yes.
Yeah, they could have edited that a bit quicker, I think, to make it seem a bit more credible. But I quite like it. It moves along at times with a good pace. But as Adam said, the more you watch it, the more you sort of pick up the nonsense that is the plot and the all the plot holes, etc. And I did sort of like seeing the TARDIS change a few times into different things, and then at the end, it's gone back to its ordinary self. And there is something which they did mention in the documentary, which is quite true. When you have a look at the Telos control room, it's sort of, there's not enough to sort of differentiate it between the sewer control room.
Exactly.
Right.
Yeah, you sort of don't understand, are two separate areas, even though one's lit a bit more dimly. And, the studio, obviously the Telos one is more bright.
Gimli, the dwarf? Gimli?
What?
What?
No, I think you misheard him there, Kirby.
No, I didn't. Unless it shows the lack of creativity on the part of the Cybermen that they have to build the same kind of control room wherever they go.
Beside the Daleks.
And there's so many funny, the Cybermen that don't talk. You know, like when they realize somebody's heating up this stuff is going to blow, one of the Cybermen makes a Leggett sort of motion. Yes. Like, come on, better get out of here. They got so many funny sort of actions that they you know, that they do like that. I just thought it's quite humorous if you have a look at the actors.
I'm amused always by the Cybermen of that era. When they talk, they have to move around.
To give emphasis to what they're saying.
Who's talking? The one moving in the corner.
Yeah.
Well, they don't have little lights like Daleks.
True. Can I just clarify something I said before?
All right.
I said this was the first Cybermen story that I saw. I meant at the time when I watched it, not obviously now, because we reviewed Tomb of the Cybermen.
Yeah, obviously, yes.
Right, okay. Have you done, Kurt? Sorry, Matt, Robert, have you done?
Yep.
Right, Kirby.
It was all right. I liked the first half a lot, actually. And I didn't mind at all the references to other stories. I kind of thought it was cool.
I did too.
Did anyone notice that where the quarry that they used for Telos was this, huh? Yeah, Gerard's Cross. It's the same quarry from Tomb of the Cybermen.
Yeah. Can I point out I pointed this out when we did Tomb of the Cybermen, and Kirby, you said I was wrong?
At the time I did. I don't remember that.
You did. Go back and listen to the episode.
He's covering it up.
Uh-oh. Matthew not only remembers everything he's read, but he remembers everything everybody has said.
He's got a transcript of it.
And I probably came back and said, after looking it up, I probably said, oh, you're right. So.
Okay. Have you done Kirby?
At the time, I had not seen Attack of the Cybermen. Now, one thing that irritated me while listening to the commentary is Colin was mixing up this quarry, which is still a quarry, and in fact, you can find it on Google Earth, with a landfill. And this is definitely not a landfill; it's a quarry, and there is no landfill in that area. He was saying I thought the Krons were silly, it's not the first silly thing in Doctor Who.
That's true.
You know what they reminded me of? They reminded me of the Censorites a little bit.
I wouldn't know.
Yeah.
I wouldn't know.
Censorites are male.
Is a collection of cryons known as a packet of cryons? That's what it deserves.
I enjoyed it. Fred watched it with me the other night, and she enjoyed it. She likes these older stories.
Good for her.
Excellent.
It was all right.
Okay, thank you, Kirby. Matthew.
Well, as I said on the 20 megabyte Facebook page, I'm tempted to invoke the old saying that if you have nothing nice to say, don't say anything at all, in relation to the story.
Does that mean you're not saying anything at all? Right then, Mary, I'm only joking.
I think he's living up to that.
Okay. Yes.
Well, I wasn't sure if anybody wanted to let me go, because I can tell you that if I go, this is going to get very negative very quickly.
All right, Mary, go. Mary, go.
No, all right. What do you want to say, Matthew? Sorry, Mary. I just want to see if he actually does want to say anything.
All right. Everyone to the bunkers.
Matthew, is it worse than Twin Dilemma, in your opinion?
It's pretty... pretty darn close.
Okay.
Ooh.
Ooh. This is going over my head.
This is very important, actually, that you actually do get to say your piece.
Okay. So this is 199.
But don't drag it out for the next whole of the next part of the episode, because we've only got another 40 minutes to go, and we've got to fit in the quiz and the feedback.
All right. Yeah, I'll try and keep things as brief as I can. I've never particularly liked this story. I haven't since the first time I saw it in 2008. I find it drawn out. I find it long. I find it boring. I find it derivative. I think even worse in the context when you look at things is that about 6 weeks after this went out, Michael Grade and Jonathan Powell made the decision to pull Doctor Who off the air. And both of them have said that they made that decision based on the stories they were looking at and looking at the show's ratings at the time. Now, that means particularly they were looking at this story and Vengeance on Varos that followed it. And you look at what this story was, and you look at their criticisms of Doctor Who at the time, and I see a lot of things lining up. They talk about the fact that the show was unimaginative, that it was delving back into its own history so much. That's the case in point here. All this story is, and I can certainly, and to talk very quickly about this controversy about who actually wrote the script with Eric Saward and Ian Levine, I can believe that Ian Levine had a hand in this, because there's so much continuity in here. I mean, virtually every 60 Cybermen story is referenced, minus the Wheel in Space. You've got Cybermen in the sewers. You've got the fact that the Cybermen apparently have a base on the moon, which is a reference back to the invasion. The 10th planet is all important. And the fact that when this story was made, Tomb of the Cybermen was missing. It was believed gone forever. And I think that on some cynical level, John Nathan Turner, Eric Saward, and Ian Levine sat around going, we can't give them Tomb of the Cybermen, but you know what we'll do? We'll do a pseudo remake of it, and we'll do a whole story set around the tombs. Now,
and the sewers.
And the sewers.
They don't look good. They don't look like the good tombs that we saw in Tomb of the Cybermen. No.
Yeah, not at all. Yeah, they had photographs and stuff. Eric Saward talks about this. But the effect this story had on the show itself is important to keep in mind. One of the things that's important to keep in mind as well is that almost 9 million people tuned in to watch the first episode. A week later, 2 million people walked away from the show, they never came back. They never came back. The show was starting to really – the show went on to a really downward – slump in the ratings and in critical approval, and I think that stories like this is why the show got pulled off the air to begin with. Because the BBC, much like today, the BBC was caught in a big financial crunch thanks to the government in power at the time. And the BBC was, you know, pulling shows off the air. It was cutting back episode counts like what's happening today. The big difference between now and then is that the BBC executives were willing to let Who continue, whereas they weren't here. And I think that this story, like a lot of the Colin Baker era, is the story of stories and people being in the wrong place at the wrong time.
Can I just add about whole Michael Grade pulling Doctor Who off the air? I thought that it was very unfair what he was saying that I've seen in interviews. He was saying that he saw Star Wars and things like that where they had a huge budget and all this grand scale and imagination. And I just kept thinking, well, if you gave Doctor Who money, they could do that. And I just always thought that was unfair to say that.
Yeah, the attitude of the BBC executives to the show at this time is best described as schizophrenic. You know, they sit there and they criticize the show for the quality of the production and the special effects, but aren't willing to give it money.
The BBC has not changed over the years. It is a government-run station, and no matter how much money Doctor Who makes even now, it does not go back into Doctor Who. It goes back into the general fund of the BBC. So it's funding other programs. So Doctor Who doesn't benefit from its own popularity.
Matthew.
Yes.
So do you dislike it because of its what you say it did with the BBC, or do you dislike it on a story level? Because it sounds like those are two different things.
Yeah.
They're not. They are two different things, and I dislike it on both counts. I don't think it works as a story. Okay. I haven't thought it worked as a story from the first time I've watched it. And to not wanting to plug something I'll probably never write, I've been researching this era of the show because I think there's a really interesting story to be told, at least in a fictional form, here. So I've been, over the last few years, really delving into this period of the show, what people were thinking, what people were saying. And that was an eye-opening experience, particularly in relation to the fact that Michael Gray and Jonathan Powell, Gray, if you don't know, was the nephew of Lord Lou Gray, the famous boss of ITC who, you know, was the film mogul and funded things like The Avengers and The Prisoner. And he was brought in specifically to make to do what Thatcher wanted the BBC to do, which was compete with ITV. And Jonathan Powell came from a serious drama background. You look at the crowning achievements of his career are the trilogy of John le Carré adaptations, Tinker, Tailor, Soldier, Spy, Smiley's People, A Perfect Spy. He didn't like Doctor Who. Michael Gray didn't like Doctor Who. And you put them in the room at the same time as stories like this and The Twin Dilemma and Vengeance on Varos are going out. It was a recipe.
Yeah, you're asking for it, aren't you?
You're asking for it. Yeah. And the attitude they had later on that they only really started to pay attention to the show because of this big blowback from when they pulled it off the air and, you know, swapping it around from 25 to 45 minutes, which wasn't even supposed to be 45 minutes originally. It was going to be 50 minutes. And they dropped it down to 45 because John Nathan Turner showed up and went, you realize by adding 5 minutes onto every episode, that's an extra episode a season. Can we have some more money? And they were like, no.
Yeah.
and, you know, they put the show back to 25 minutes. They don't change the creative people. They let the show carry on. And then they go fire the lead actor. And then they stop caring about the show again. Yeah. It's bizarre. Yeah. But I really do view Attack of the Cybermen as being the beginning of the end of old Who. You know, at least from a ratings point of view, from the way the BBC was looking at it. Because as bad as Twin Dilemma is, the same amount of people tuned in to watch Twin Dilemma as tuned in to watch Case of Androzani the previous 2 weeks. That is remarkable. But they started walking away from this story.
Right.
Can I just say something with that, though, Matthew, is that people would have obviously been interested to tune in because there's a new doctor in the case of Twin Dilemma. So because it was a novelty back then, having a story by, you know, the new doctor as well, following on from, you know, the rest of the season of Peter Davison. So that would have probably been part of that. But also Attack of the Cybermen would have gained a good audience for the first episode anyway, because it was the season return after, 9 months or whatever it was. We do find that sort of happens with the seasons, you know, the season opener, the first episode will gain because obviously it's back after a while. So there would be a bit of that, I suppose.
Yeah, but you don't normally see the huge drop off and lead off of viewers that happened here and that continue Vengeance on Varos as well.
The thing is that first episode isn't that bad. It's the second episode.
I agree with that.
So
why did people leave from that first episode? It's not that bad.
Can I,
go ahead, Bob.
I was just going to say, also, it just goes to show you how this era around this time towards it's, you know, how many years later, nearly 30 years later, and it still evokes so much passion. You know, it's just amazing that I can't believe it, that after all this time, it can still get to people so much.
Yeah. Kirby, to answer your question, Doctor Who was moved off Saturday nights originally after Tom Baker's final season because it was getting killed in the ratings by ITV. And that was the reason it was moved into the slot that EastEnders eventually took. Doctor Who pioneered EastEnders' slot. But what happened, they put it back on Saturday nights against, I think it was Robin of Sherwood was on ITV, which was a big hit in its time. And what seems to have happened is that people tuned in out of curiosity. It was a chance for Doctor Who, particularly with Michael Gray coming in, being told you've got to compete to grab new viewers. And the story wasn't up to it. And people walked away and they swapped channels the next week and they kept watching Robin of Sherwood instead of Doctor Who. But Adam, I apologize for how long I've gone on for.
Yeah, thanks for keeping it brief.
I did warn you.
About the ratings, obviously the ratings from episode 1 to episode 2 dropped by over 1 million, which was a very large drop. So there must have been something about episode 1 that the general viewer didn't like. Mary, what did you think of it?
Well, I'll try to be briefer than Matthew. several decades ago, when I was first exposed to Doctor Who, it was Ooh,
what
Tom
did he,
Baker.
What did he think with you standing there next to
him? He was impressed, I'll tell you. I was pretty hot at the time. But anyway, I kind of dismissed him as a bit of a buffoon because of his, you know, clownish hair and his crazy outfit. But I wasn't like sitting and watching him like my brother was. And then a few, you know, one or decade later or something, I had the chance to sit down and watch Doctor Who again. And lo and behold, it was Colin Baker, who looked even more clownish, the ridiculous outfit and the clown-like hair. And I thought, oh, this guy is just a buffoon. I want nothing to do with him. So that was my last exposure to Doctor Who. So going into trying to watch some Colin Baker episodes, listen, like this one in particular, with the music is kind of, you know, clown-like, and he's so silly with Perry and later on with Bonnie. I've just decided to sit back and just accept him as the clownish, buffoonish kind of guy that he is, and not take anything in these episodes very seriously. And so taking it from that viewpoint, I find it entertaining, and that's about it.
Yeah, thank you, Mary. Right, and obviously running out of time, it's now time for this week's edition of You Won't Get This One.
Are we not doing feedback?
No, because we haven't got time, unfortunately. I'll have to put that on at the end of the show. Sorry.
You'll have to put Captain Kirk's.
Yeah, that'll be on the show, but you might not get to hear it. Sorry. Oh. I did say there were time constraints. Nobody listens to me.
Why won't we hear it?
You will do when you listen to the podcast, but you might not listen to it.
Going to listen to it if we listen to the podcast.
Between us and his family, he's in a whip-cracking mode here.
Yeah.
Oh.
Right, the first question goes to Reese. Reese?
Okay, go on then.
Yes. What does the sewer have more bulges than?
Oh, Perry's.
What?
What does the sewer have more bulges than? There's a line in the show, by the way.
Yeah.
It's got more than them, yes.
So who knows?
Matthew?
No idea.
The answer is an antenatal clinic.
What?
What?
Robert.
What?
What is the name of the first...
Wait. What? This sounds like it's Googling time.
They were down the sewer. One of the characters says... This sewer has more bulges than the antenatal clinic.
But what is that?
What, an antenatal clinic? That's where
is that like labor and delivery?
Yeah, it's where women go for classes on how to give birth.
Yeah.
Right.
Okay, they don't call it that here, which is why...
yeah, but it's a line in the show. They didn't change the line in the show.
Well, that's why it went over our heads, at least the Americans.
Never mind. Yeah, Robert.
Yeah.
Robert.
Yes.
What is the name of the first sewer worker to die? That's off camera he dies, but we know he's dead because when the other one calls him.
Ooh, I know.
I know.
I don't know. Go on, Mary.
Go on in, Mary.
David.
Correct.
Hang on. Attenborough.
David Tennant, really?
Right, Kirby.
He was only 15 at the time.
Yes.
What is the Doctor a man of? Three things he says. He's a man of...
Steel.
Science, I would guess.
Yes, another one.
Science. Yeah. Passion. I don't remember the other.
All right, so would anybody like to come in to get an extra point for the other one?
Oh, did I get the passion?
You got two of them.
Yeah.
So I've given you a point for each. Aren't I generous? There's still a one left if anybody would like to come in for a bonus point.
Right.
I think I know.
Go on in, Matthew.
Loud voice?
No.
No, Perry,
I think
Perry
it's...
Called.
I think it's temperament.
It is. I'm going to give you that one, even though we've gone through well every done. Option going. Right on. So that's
exact.
Hang on. Oh, I pressed it twice. That's a ding. Correct answer for Mary. Matthew. Ooh.
Yes.
Right.
May I press the button again?
No. What is the value of the diamonds that Lytton intends to steal?
I know.
£10 million know. Pounds.
Mary.
Yes.
What is the name of the character played by Terry Molloy? Boy, Terry Molloy.
That's easy.
Oh, I know. Well, isn't that Griffiths?
Oh.
Hang on. So I didn't get the answer at all because you lot are going, I know, over it. So please say that again, Mary.
What was wrong?
Is it Griffiths?
No.
I know.
No, Robert said, I know first.
Russell.
Yes, he did.
No, Robert said, that's easy, which is essentially, I know.
Russell!
What did you say?
Russell!
What do you want me to rustle? I haven't got any sweet papers on me.
Can you? Oh.
All right. Next.
Who's doing that?
Naughty. Now, we will need to find out that is.
I'm only doing what Robert told me to. You can't be disappointed.
Reese.
Yes.
After
yes.
time turbulence, where does Perry say her heart is?
I know.
Oh.
Under her knock.
Her left one. That's really throwing me off now.
I can ask the question again.
Yeah, I really can't remember.
I know.
No.
Pardon, Reese?
Give it to Kirby.
That's
I don't know.
Where her liver is.
In her body.
Here's the correct answer. Right. Robert.
Yes, sir.
What colour are Perry's earrings?
Oh.
Oh, I wasn't looking that high.
And Matthew Ooh. Can't look it up in his script.
Yes.
I closed that down. Thank you very much.
Are we going to get an answer?
When I bring that up, I'm just teasing you. Come on.
Are we going to get... What was the answer there, Robert?
Is it blue? Is it blue?
Correct.
Oh!
Kirby.
Yes.
What is Perry's reaction to the TARDIS changing into a cabinet?
She laughs.
I've lost where I was now. no, what does he... she says a word. She does laugh, but that's, I'm talking about her reaction as in what she says.
I don't remember what she says.
I know.
Go on in, Matthew.
She says it's neat in a sarcastic way.
Oh, that's right, yeah.
Matthew.
Yes.
Right. Yeah, she actually says, oh, neat, Doctor, is it? But that's fine. Perry complains that the Doctor has called her by what other names?
That's a bit Tegan? Personal. Zoe?
Oh, yeah.
Susan?
Terrible,
Jamie?
Deduct a point from Robert.
Yeah, Dr. Borch from Robert indeed. Right. So that was correct.
I heard it.
I did hear what you said, actually, and I'm not going to repeat it. It wasn't rude, by the way, but it was nevertheless jumping in with an incorrect answer.
Robert was promoting a fanzine that I write for.
No comment. Yeah. Right.
And no, it was
is the correct answer, by the way.
Did you say Jamie?
Yes.
Yes.
If you weren't talking over me, Robert, you'd know this.
You get 2 points, by the way. I can't give you bonus points for that, but you got completely right. That was 2 points.
So I'll be right back.
That was 2 points for that, but well done. Right, the next one's for Mary.
Okay.
How does the Doctor describe...
Okay, I'm back.
That should say who. Start again. Who does the Doctor describe as a woman of rare guile and devilish cunning?
I know. Oh my gosh, yeah, it's right on the tip of my tongue. I give it away because I don't know.
Well, Matthew came in with the I know first. I don't know what Robert was. Robert was just going which wasn't really an
Matthew
I know.
Matthew writes for here.
Yeah, it's the terrible Zodin.
It's
yes.
All right.
Which is also the
after that, there's a couple of rounds of questioning. In last place, with no points, is Reese. Not really surprising, because he has only watched half the story. In second to last place, with 2 points each is Robert and Mary. In second place with 3 points is Kirby, but was nice. In first place with 6 points, Matthew.
That's a surprise.
You know what's funny is that you're asking questions about the first half of the story and Reese still doesn't know them.
Yes.
I was about to say that. I can't remember a thing about it, really.
Open the door for her, please.
That's a criticism I have of her. It's pretty
unbelievable. Get away, dogs. Right, where do we get up to? Whose question is it? Thanks for that, Deb.
I think I was the last one you asked a question of.
Yeah, so Reese is next.
Oh, yes.
Right, Reese.
Let's see if I can get it wrong again.
What is the second object the TARDIS materialises as?
That was that piano, wasn't it? Or the organ? It was a piano, wasn't it?
That's the correct answer. Yes.
It's an organ.
Said organ.
Yeah, but then he corrected himself and said piano.
No, he said piano, then organ. He got the answer right, basically. Robert.
It's got a keyboard.
Yes. Never mind.
Yes.
What does the doctor say when Perry bleats, "You said it was gunfire," while exploring the sewers?
Oh, I don't know, actually. Matthew?
Matthew? Anybody?
What was the question?
The question was, what does Perry bleat? What does the doctor say after Perry bleats, "You said it was gunfire," while they were exploring the sewers?
Oh, I heard me. I remember. That was funny. He said, "I heard me."
Is the correct answer.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, well. Oh.
And I even stopped it when watching it and replayed that for Fred because it was funny.
Right. This question's for Kirby.
Yes.
Where does Lytton come from?
The police.
Oh, I know.
That's very funny.
I don't know.
Well, who said I know first?
I did.
I think.
Go on in, Robert.
It's Riften 5, isn't it?
Yeah.
Oh, no. Lytton. Lytton. I thought you said you were talking about Russell. Sorry.
You want the planet? I know the planet.
No. The question was, where does Lytton come from? Because Cyberman asked the questions, and he says...
Yes.
Not what you said, Robert, so it's...
Riften 5.
No, let me say.
Go on in, Mary.
Vita 15.
Correct.
Yes.
Right. Sorry, Robert, but that's... I did... Oh, sorry.
Oh, you've really hurt him.
Mary.
And I'm now embarrassed again because you said Lytton and Mary. I heard Russell for some reason.
This is what you get for that.
Oh, Adam. Ooh.
Right, so the next question, I think it's for Matthew, if I'm correct. Is that right? Or is it for Kirby? I've lost where I am now, then.
I don't know.
It's Kirby.
No, I don't think it's time for me yet.
Just me.
Yeah, so it's Kirby next. Will you stop scratching yourself next to that table?
Sorry.
Just itchy.
Every time Adam does one of these questions, I keep thinking he's going to say, "What is your quest?"
Okay.
I
Kirby.
A couple of weeks ago.
Kirby.
Yes.
What is the name of Lytton's satellite?
I don't know.
Anybody?
I know.
Go on in, Matthew.
It's Riften 5.
There you go.
Correct.
Yeah.
Wasn't that something that Robert just said?
Yes, that's what
wrong?
I'm saying. It was wrong.
It was a wrong question.
Yes.
It was, he asked for the planet. That was the satellite.
Yes.
Yeah.
Hmm. Okay.
Matthew.
Yes.
I'm completely lost now as to where I am with this. Seem to have gone a bit backwards with the questioning. It is your question, isn't it?
I believe so.
So do I. Yeah. Who failed to grab the cyberhead?
Stratton.
Is the correct answer. Mary.
Yeah.
Yes.
Where did Lytton tell Griffiths that he came from?
I said that at the beginning.
I don't remember.
Can I say it?
Yes, go on.
Was it different?
Fulham.
Correct.
Yeah.
So after that round of questioning, in last place is Reese with 2 points.
This is what happens when I don't take notes.
Yeah. Second to last place with 3 points is Robert and Mary. It is okay.
High five, Mary. High five.
Wait, did you say only had 2 points?
You have 3 points.
Oh, okay. Okay.
In second place with 4 points is Kirby, but surprise, surprise, in the lead with 8 points is Matthew.
Oh, what? DVD player.
Sorry?
The DVD player.
What DVD
it's Alicia.
Player?
Alicia.
It should be unplugged.
Blu-ray.
Not yet, it shouldn't.
Yes, it should. Now.
Why? She's watching it, isn't she?
No, she's watching Sky.
Why does it have to be done now?
Immediately. You'd have it done
honestly,
by now.
Where do we get up?
She who must be obeyed.
Exactly.
What is your favourite colour?
Do you know, I thought Morris Gobham did a fantastic job as Lytton, don't you reckon?
Yes.
He's
another thing that his performance was great. It's another good thing about episode. I don't have as negative a view of this episode as
Matthew.
Some of us.
Well, he's one of the few things I actually like about this story, and Resurrection for that matter.
Haven't seen it.
He's got a very stern, striking face, hasn't he?
Yeah. But he's so convincing the way he acts, though, as well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I even like Brian Glover. I mean, he's so funny. You know the bit when he was imitating the Cybermen? He's saying, talking about that they're having a fancy dress or something. Yes. And then he imitates the Cybermen, the way they talk.
And they were saying somewhere, I think it's in the info text, he was going to be killed at that point. But they kept his character because of that. And they gave him because the way he delivered the line. And they gave him some of Perry's lines.
I don't think it's a good idea.
Right.
I don't think it's a good idea.
Got a very bad feeling about this.
We should have done this yesterday.
It's a trap.
Help me out. It's a trap.
Welcome to the 20 megabyte Star Wars podcast.
Right, where do we get up to?
Disturbance in the Force.
Where do we get up to?
Well, we got up to you unplugging the DVD player.
That's a Blu-ray. But Blu-ray, I've done it now. Yes. What was the last question? I've lost her.
I think I was the last one you asked a question of.
Okay, then. So that leaves it. It's now Reese's turn. Reese?
It might be getting a little bit difficult
soon because we're moving into episode two's questions. How many years are a handful of heartbeats to a Time Lord?
I know.
Matthew.
Of course you
know. Unless Reese answer the question.
Yes.
No, I can't remember. Give it to Matthew. I didn't take notes, okay.
Matthew.
No, this is in the second.
Can he answer the question?
Great.
30 years.
Is the correct answer.
Oh my goodness.
Say 60.
Right. What were you going to say?
Robert, would you like to do the maths class that I was in to try and remember all that stuff, or try and remember Doctor?
Hang on, Kirby, were you going to say something?
I don't remember.
Okay.
He's Robert. Slowly.
Yes, sir.
What does Griffiths say while mocking the Cyberman?
I was just talking about that. I can't remember what he said, though.
Yeah.
Anybody? Right, time's up. It's getting a bit rough, is it?
Yeah.
Hmm?
Yes,
I remember that he says the line in the cyber-like way, but I couldn't remember what the actual line was.
Okay.
Yeah, me too.
Right, is it Kirby next? Is it Robert? That's your question, Robert, because people keep putting me off.
What did he say?
Pardon?
What did he say, though?
He said...
Getting a bit rough, is it?
Yes.
It's getting a bit rough.
Yes. He says it like that, yes. Kirby.
Yes.
What word does a Cyberman use to name his race?
Cybermen? I don't know.
I think that would be obvious.
Anybody? Why are you all going all... Hang on. You're all going very weird.
Oh.
Oh, no, not all of you. It's only Robert. Right. Yeah, who wants to answer the question then correctly?
Is it Mondavian or Mondovian?
That's it.
The answer is cyborg. They are Cybermen causing the cyborg race. Right then, Matthew.
Yes.
How long did the 20-second destruction countdown actually last before the Doctor deactivated it?
I checked this.
To the nearest second.
As in the actual how long it counts down for on screen?
Yeah, from when he flicks the switch to when he stops the switch. So how long was it? The 20
seconds.
19 seconds. Oh, sorry. I pressed the wrong button then. It was, in fact, not 19 seconds. Kirby, you seem to know the answer because you said you've counted it.
No, what I was counting was to make sure that they were taking the actual amount of time.
Yes.
You would do that, Kirby. You would.
Yeah, that's a Kirby thing to do.
And I thought it was 19 too, but I'll say 18.
No, it was 22 wrong. Seconds from me switches the switch to start it and switches the switch to stop it. So it's going to be a...
No, but the
yes,
actual...
Yes.
No.
The numbers...
No.
They actually did the numbers correctly. It's not one of those ones where you see a countdown and you see five happen twice and stuff.
Wrong, but go on then, Matthew. We're going to say something. Not going to get any points for it, but carry on.
Kirby and I are watching the NTSC version. NTSC is slightly sped up. The TV movie is actually 4 minutes shorter in NTSC than it is in PAL on the DVD
release.
Doesn't matter. Doesn't matter.
So I think this question is bogus.
Yeah. Who says?
Oh, my God.
All right, then. All right. Right, Kirby, you can have another question then. Be quiet.
I wasn't watching the time.
I won't have you another question. Just be quiet. Thank you. Right. Kirby, on what level of the cyber control was there a rogue Cyberman?
I'm just going to throw out a number. 9. I don't know.
Anybody?
That's it.
Who said that? Sorry.
You know who said that.
Oh, go on, Matthew.
4.
Here's the correct answer. Surprise, surprise. Right, Matthew.
Yes.
Who played Flast?
Flast was played...
Look it up. I'm not talking over him, or I deduct points.
I'm not looking it up. I was trying to make sure... She was played by Faith Brown, I think.
Yeah. Yeah, correct.
What a surprise. All right, I'll just give you 3 points. What's the matter with me? Mary.
Doesn't matter.
Mary.
Yes.
Why do the Cybermen need a time vessel? You've gone very quiet.
To go back to Mondas?
Not really, no. Anybody?
Go back in time.
God, you're getting worse and worse, Robert. Isn't that weird? To go back in time is a stupid answer because that's fairly obvious. The answer is to prevent Mondas from being destroyed.
Yeah.
I thought it was to do the time warp again.
Okay, right. Not many questions left. The current scores are in last place, Reese with 2. In second to last place with 3 points, Mary and Robert. And then in second place, Kirby with 4 points, and in the lead with 12 points.
How do I keep staying in second place when I keep...
By remembering.
Because nobody else is getting any points at the moment, apart from Matthew.
Because I'm rubbish at this.
Reese, yes. What is the name of the man who gets disguised as a Cyberman?
Why can't I remember it?
I know.
Well, Robert's already said it's easy, so that means he knows. Reese?
Okay, give it to Rob. No, I don't. Give it to him.
4.
Go on then, Robert.
Stratton.
No, I can't give it to anyone else for any points, but go on then, Matthew.
Bates.
Correct. Right. Robert.
I got mixed up.
Yeah, seeing that Stratton was the answer to a previous question. It had only had three fates.
Right. How many crew members does the time vessel need? This is Robert. Three.
I know.
Here's the correct answer.
Three.
Right. Kirby.
At least, anyway.
Yes.
What is the very unstable mineral called?
Oh,
blast.
No. Yeah. Good.
It's a good nickname for it.
Yes. Answer?
I don't remember.
All right, anybody?
Vitel?
Is near enough.
I know it begins with a V. Yeah. Oh, you said.
It was Vastille, but I'm going to give you that because it's nearly right.
You didn't even say an S.
Yeah.
Oh, it doesn't matter. Who was that last question for? Kirby. So this is Matthew's question. Oh, I might as well just do this. Right, Mary.
This is to say he wins.
Oh, go on then, Matthew. Just for the sake of it, at what temperature does the unstable mineral self-ignite?
Minus 10.
This gives me great pleasure to do this. Anybody like to come in with the right answer?
I thought it was zero.
Yeah.
Anything above zero.
The answer is 15 degrees Celsius. That's when it self-ignites. It becomes unstable at minus... at plus 10 degrees. And it self-ignites at plus 15 degrees. Please pay attention when watching the programmes in future, apart from you, Reese, of course.
Please watch all of the programme again.
Right, Mary.
What
is the Sixth Doctor's catchphrase in this story? Basically, what does he say a few times? By way of showing off.
Oh, so it's not the... not the one that you said.
I am known as a doctor. No, that's
I'm known as a doctor.
It's only in this story he seems to say it.
Is it excellent?
That's what the cyber leader says. Anybody?
I know.
Go on in, Matthew.
Wait, watch, and learn
is the correct answer.
Oh yes.
Oh my God.
Right, wait, then.
I didn't notice that he said that multiple times.
He says it like three or four times. It was like they were going to use that as his catchphrase and then dropped it.
I don't know how. All right, steady on, Robert. I don't know how we've managed to arrive at the end of questioning with two questions left. I don't know how that's worked. Somebody must have had the same question twice. But we have two questions left just for the fun of it. And these are, what is the Cyberman's only weakness?
I know.
Matthew. Weaknesses.
That they'll come to the defense of other Cybermen.
Not near enough, I'm afraid.
Gold? Distress call?
Gold?
Oh, I'm going to give you a point for that, Robert. Yeah, gold isn't mentioned in this episode. It's a funny thing. Right, and the final question for free-for-all is... The actual answer was they will react to the distress call of their own kind. No mention of gold in brackets. Right, last question. Free-for-all. What word is missing from Perry's last line? She says, Earth safe, so is history and the blank of time. What's the missing word?
I know.
Go on then, Kirby.
Web.
Oh. Web the correct answer. Yeah. Final scores then.
Which made me think of fixed points in time.
I don't know why. I keep closing this door and it seems to spontaneously open with a 7-year-old flying through it and then out again very quickly.
Yes,
right, final scores. In last place. Oh, good grief.
Yes?
No, sorry, I'll say it after this. Just remind me.
Well, if your voice fades anymore, you won't be saying anything soon. In last place.
Is it really that bad?
Yes, you sound like you're just on the phone line.
We can hardly hear you.
In last place with 2 points is Reese, but well done for getting the 2 points, Reese. In second to last place with 3 points is Mary. In third place second place, actually, with joint 6 points, Robert and Kirby. But surprise, surprise.
High five, Kirby.
Surprise, surprise. The winner with 14 points, Matthew.
to come up with the quiz question, so somebody else might have a chance to win.
Yeah, no, I know what you're after. I know what you're trying to do, because you know full well if I'm actually posed any quiz questions, I'm going to do really badly, and you just want to get your own back on me. That ain't happening. I pose questions. No, I don't answer them.
Playing field a little bit.
Well, yeah. Everybody fusses. I always win. You commented two or three episodes ago about how you would actually like to play the quiz sometime.
Did I? I don't remember saying that. I think you're putting words
you
in my mouth.
You don't always win. You don't always win. There have been times you've lost.
No, only when he's pretending to be rubbish. We've already established.
Yeah, there was one time when I won the quiz.
And there was one time. I think I won twice.
Was that the one, Mary, when Matthew wasn't on?
I don't remember.
Right.
I'm just savoring my one win.
In regards to feedback.
I remember the days when I used to be the one who won.
I know. In regards to feedback, like I said last week, we've got a couple of standby audios from Dr. Phil, which obviously are Stones of Blood and Keys of Mariner. So,
standby.
Not yet, because this is an episode in regards to Attack of the Cybermen.
Real quick news, Christopher Eccleston actually acknowledged the existence of his being the Doctor.
Yes, I know. He said he loved the Doctor, didn't he?
Yeah. But, yeah.
Well, obviously, we haven't got much time, as you can probably...
I have to go. Yes. I have to say goodbye
I've got to go in a minute, too. And could you, since we've got Keys of Marinus next week, could you put up, like, three more stories?
I'll try to, but I am on holiday. But, yes.
Well, so those of us who need to get them in advance,
yes, okay,
can
we'll
have
do that.
A chance.
We'll do that. Yeah. Meanwhile,
and when we're recording again.
Yes, well, I don't know. It might have to be Monday again because, like I say, I'm on holiday. But anyway,
I gotta say bye.
Bye, Mary.
Next Monday, next Monday is Labor Day. It's not necessarily a good one for Americans.
Okay, well,
we'd like to sleep. I'll do it if I have to.
What
though.
Are we all?
That's what she said. All right, maybe Sunday. Anyway, can I get on with this feedback? This is from a regular contributor to the show.
Hello, Truth and Megabuck Podcast. This is Inkirk. This review is late because I've been watching Roller Derby. Yay, Denton, Texas. Attack of the Cybermen by somebody or other. The elements of the story are familiar from the ones we reviewed recently. A sewer like Talons of Wen Chiang, Perry, more Gallifreyan circuit boards, a lot of killing.
Yes.
The jumps to the parallel story of the two men trying to escape from a quarry are distracting, although they do become part of the story at the end. It is not clear why the Cybermen are keeping a Cryon prisoner. It does provide a resolution for the plot. And this comet is mentioned twice. It is going to be used to destroy human civilization. It is never mentioned by the Cybermen, though. Mm. I'm glad we do not have one Cyberman with an ethnic minority accent, in aid of political correctness.
Yeah.
The working title for the story was The Cold War, which has been reused recently.
Indeed.
It has, really?
Yes.
The Doctor opens a Cyberhead to activate its distress beacon. No sign of a skull, like the Pandorica opens.
Yes.
Is Perry's first outfit pink or magenta? I'm having a look now. Sure, I will have another look later.
What's he wrapping up?
I do not like this story. It belongs in the scrapyard. Bye for now.
Not what?
Yeah, I'm assuming that was Steptoes.
I didn't see what happened. Tell me in a minute. Oh, is that it? Oh, thank you, Ian. Right, there's...
Yes, thank you, Captain.
Echo.
I'm sorry about that. If you weren't able to hear it from this, there's an echo.
So I don't know if that's correct.
You haven't seen what?
It is.
Echo.
Oh, never mind.
Echo.
There's more feedback.
Hello to everyone at the 10 Gigabyte Doctor Who podcast. This is Patrick from North Hollywood, California. It's been a while since I've seen some feedback, but I'm back. Back with the feedback. Attack of the Cybermen. It's my first time seeing the story. I haven't really seen too many Colin Baker stories. This is my first time watching it. It started off for me a little bit slow, but I enjoyed it. I enjoyed it a lot. A couple of things I noticed about it that struck me. I don't know if it's because... if it was that's how it was with the Collins Baker's doctor stories. But there, a lot of people died in this episode. Like, lots of people got killed.
Yes.
So it struck me as particularly violent. And another thing, I'm not sure, I'm sure someone on the show can correct me if I'm wrong, but when Lytton or Lytton, whatever that guy's name is, the alien, when the Cybermen try to torture him to get the information out of him and they squeeze his hands, and he's like, his hands are all bloody and bleeding and there's blood on the floor when he's crumpled on the floor. I don't remember seeing that much, if any, graphic depictions of blood in Doctor Who, so it kind of threw me off. But yeah, it was particularly noticeable. So maybe someone on the show, maybe Matthew or Kirby, can confirm or give some insight as to that particular use of graphic blood on the show and its history. But yeah, it stood out to me because I don't remember seeing it in the current series or the classic episodes. Anyway, I also liked how they were at the scrapyard from the original episode. I like the chameleon circuit malfunctioning again after Colin Baker tries to repair it. It's like those little touches. Perry, Nicola Bryant's performance in this episode really kind of bugged me. Maybe it's probably the line she was given, but she was kind of grating to me. I mean, I normally like that character.
Really?
So it must have been just the script for her character for this episode. But other than that, I enjoyed it. I enjoyed it a lot. And that's it for my feedback. I hope you guys have a great week.
Thank you, Patrick.
Patrick?
Yeah. It was nice to hear from you,
Patrick. Matthew, other people don't have absolute negative views of it.
Anyway, so that's about it.
About blood, though?
Have we got time, Kirby? Because you're about to go, aren't you?
Well, I wanted to hear Patrick though. That's why I stuck around.
Okay.
But I really do have to get downstairs, pack my lunch, and get out of here.
Okay.
So,
all right,
thank you, Kirby.
Bye.
Okay. Bye, Kirby.
Thank you, Kirby.
Bye.
Right. Briefly, Robert.
I was going to say we do see blood. We see blood in what's that? The Pyramids of Mars.
Yeah.
I was going to say
shooting
that.
There. We also see in
Deadly Assassin.
Deadly Assassin.
Okay, well, obviously, it's using Doctor Who to make a particular impact. That's why they didn't use it very much.
This was by far the most graphic that they had used in the series, and it came in for a lot of stick at the time, and I think it's one of the things that still remains controversial about this story.
Yeah, fair enough. I'm going to say sorry to listeners that it's been a bit rushed this week, but obviously there was quite a lot said about this story, and we just sort of run out of time in the end. Hopefully next week we'll be able to compact it in a little bit better. Right, so what's the story
and
next week?
Next week I'll keep to a schedule Keys and I won't, you know.
Keys of Marinus.
Miss half the story.
So I can't believe you got the wrong time, Reese.
Yeah,
I know.
Okay, so Keys of Marinus next week, and maybe we might actually be able to fit in news as well, which would be very nice. I'm off on holiday, so I don't know how I'm going to actually be able to watch a five-part Doctor Who story, but I'll try my best. Thanks, everybody, for joining us. Or is it six?
It's six parts.
That makes it even worse. Thanks for joining us.
There's only three five-part stories, The Dominators, The Mind Robber, and The Demons.
Thank you, Matthew.
Do I get points?
No. See you again next week. You don't need them, for goodness sake. Goodbye.
Bye-bye.
So long, and thanks for all the fish.
All the fish.
Farewell.
The 20 Megabyte Doctor Who podcast is an APV Services production and is a proud member of the Doctor Who Podcast Alliance. Doctor Who is a trademark of the BBC. No copyright infringement intended.